The Roundball Project is brought to you by Striptease, the one-stop shop for the discerning Australian football fan. They specialise in designing football-centric shirts, hoodies, phone cases, and masks. Yes, masks. Plus a whole lot more, so you can look as good around town as you do at the game. Find them at striptease.com.au. That's striptease.com.au. Enjoy the podcast.
Did the fullback bring him down? First time, maybe even second time. Still we go on. Juric has dribbled his way clear.
Jason Davidson from Ulsan Hyundai.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
How is the lockdown period at the moment in Korea?
It's actually not too bad now. Back to a bit of normality. Obviously, the K-League's up and running. People kind of gone back to normal. Still a bit cautious when we go outside. Everyone's wearing masks. But yeah, definitely heading in the right direction.
Have a deep dive into your career. So all the way from the start at Hume City. So obviously, getting that first move overseas, what were the adjustments like for yourself?
So obviously, I went to Japan when I was younger through the academy. Then I came back to Hume for about 6 months, played in the VPL back then. And then I played 6 months and then went over to Portugal. So it was obviously, I think coming back to Australia for that 6 months was a bit of adjustment because coming from academy, mainly playing against kids and then coming and playing against men was a bit of an adjustment. But I think it taught me and gave me that opportunity to play against adults and strengthened me up a little bit to prepare for my European adventure.
The second question that we wanted to ask you, Jace, is obviously you've had some memorable moments in your career so far, obviously such as the Asian Cup in 2015, winning the Slovenian League and the Cup in 2018. What would you say is the most feel-good moment in your career?
Yeah, it's a tough one. There's definitely a few things, a couple that you've mentioned. Also, you know, representing your country at a World Cup, playing in the Prem was always a dream of mine as a youngster. It's hard, but I think if you look at it, for me, I think winning Australia's first trophy, a major trophy in men's football, especially in Australia on home soil, the way we did it in front of so many, you know, fans and in front of your family, I think probably that's got to top all of it off. It's just something crazy. It's hard to explain in words the build up throughout the tournament, and then obviously, you know, to play a final in front of 80 odd thousand fans, the whole country behind you. Even if you followed football, you didn't, it kind of, that atmosphere, because it was in Australia, to have the whole kind of country just zone in for that particular time, that tournament, and then to be able to win it the way we did, going into extra time, and yeah, just all that emotions, and to do it in front of family and friends was, you know, something very, very special.
Yeah, and I'm getting flashbacks now of watching that with the family and stuff. That was such a good moment.
Like, when Charisi put that in, oh, the elation just is unbelievable. Like, I'm looking at my Asian Cup ticket now from the first game against Kuwait.
It was crazy, because like, if you remember the goal, Tommy Juric put it through the guy's legs, and then we locked eyes. So he was actually trying to cross to me because I saw him. We locked eyes, but what happened was, if you remember, the goalkeeper touched it when he was crossing the last second.
And when that's right.
I thought, oh my God, I just hope it goes to one of the boys, like, because, you know, it obviously was going away from me. And fortunately enough, Jimmy put it in the back of the net and sealed it for us.
You know, another poignant moment for me was the 2014 World Cup. Obviously, you know, some very memorable moments there, Tim Cahill's volley. And ultimately, you know, you had a very positive showing. What was it like to be in that camp and, you know, with the boys and with so many wonderful players and just playing on the world's biggest stage?
Yeah, I think if you look at that particular World Cup, it was quite unique. Firstly, because it was probably one of the World Cups that we've gone, and just before the tournament, obviously having a new head coach kind of brought in a lot of younger players, probably inexperienced players at the time. And it was kind of getting thrown in the deep end a little bit, because the actual players that kind of qualified, like the older generation, especially, you know, people like Lucas Neal, Maxwell, these guys that had done all the qualifications, and then right at the end, kind of everything kind of chopped and changed. And we were fortunate enough, like players like myself, you know, Matthew Leckie, Matty Ryan, that were just kind of breaking in, kind of was given that opportunity to go to World Cup when we kind of not necessarily earned that right, but we were given that right. We got given that opportunity. So it was an unbelievable experience, you know, especially to play in a World Cup that was in South America, you know, where football was a religion. Crazy fans, how the passionate the fans are. And to be in camp, it was fun, to be honest, because we were a bunch of kids, pretty much, a lot of us younger coming through. I think we were fearless because we had nothing to lose, kind of just wanted to go out there and enjoy the situation and just play. And we had a good balance because we had some, you know, players that have gone through that. You know, we had leaders in the team. You had Bresh, you had Timmy, you know, other players there that as well. Milsey, Mille. You had some players, Matty Mackay, you know, just to mention a few that had experienced that. So we had a good balance between younger and, you know, experienced players. And we had a good atmosphere in the group. And it was enjoyable because it's not easy to go away for a long period of time to be stuck with the same kind of people day in, day out. And if you don't have that chemistry, it can be quite difficult. But for us, it was very easy. We were all there to, you know, represent our country to the best we could. And for me, the best part of it was just to play against the world's best and the whole world watching. I remember the first game against Chile when the national anthem went. It was just unbelievable to see how loud, like, the atmosphere in that stadium is probably one of the best atmospheres I've played in. It was crazy how enthusiastic, even Australian supporters, like, it's just a totally different feeling to a national team game or an Asian Cup to when it's a World Cup, because everyone becomes a fan and everyone, you know, tunes in for that.
That would have been sick, man. I can't, like, as a fan growing up to watch football, I can't imagine, you know, going out to step out on a professional pitch, let alone playing in a World Cup, man. So that, you've got some stories there for the grandkids one day, man.
yeah, it's crazy.
Jason, I wanted to get your opinion on what it would take for an Australian player to succeed within the Premier League and do well. Obviously, we have great examples right now with Aaron Moy and Matty Ryan over there. But in your sort of opinion, obviously, having played at West Brom, what was your experience there, and what would you recommend for someone potentially being in that situation in a few years or so?
Firstly, for me in particular, in my situation, I think it was a bit tough. It was maybe and I've said this previously, I think it might have been the wrong move, looking back at it, going to the Premier League. Just purely and simply because it just wasn't my type of football. So for me, in my personal case, you know, it's a tough league. Obviously, it's the biggest league, it is the biggest league in the world. Television, it's broadcasted everywhere. It's the league that all the superstars go to, big money. But it's a tough one. Like I said, for me, it was always a dream to play in the Premier League. But to be there, it's the best way I can explain it for, you know, especially for young Aussies, that want to accomplish that dream, is it's brutal over there. You know, it's day in, day out. You've got to be the best. You've got to be the best at all times. Competition, because the money is so is big over there. It's so easy to, you know, if you're not performing, just to cut you and get someone else that is going to perform. And for me, the biggest thing, the biggest hurdle that I found was hard. I was kind of used to, you know, European football, especially playing in Holland. Like, it's Saturday to Saturday, week by week, you know, you got time to rest, recover. Whereas in England, the games just come week, every couple of days. You got cups here, cups there. Training's high intensity. It's raining. The pitches are heavy. And I found the recovery period very difficult to handle because my body just wasn't used to it. I think I went there at, I think I was 22 or maybe just early, just turned 23. And when I looked at, I remember looking at the younger boys that are 15, 16 year olds, like in the academy, and their legs were double my size. And that's because from a young age, they're just always in the gym and they've prepared their bodies. Whereas, you know, coming from overseas, I wasn't used to that physicality, that physical, you know, direct football. So yeah, I found that a bit hard. So for me, my best advice probably is to make sure, you know, for young boys are on a technical side, take the technical side away from it. You definitely need to prepare your body to be able to, you know, handle that physicality.
I know there's a whole lot of thing about the work permits and whatnot in order to get into the Premier League. So I guess, do you believe why not a lot of Australians are currently playing in the Premier League is partly due to this like work permit situation and just how hard it is for people to get into academies, let alone clubs in general?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think yes and no, because I am a believer that if you're good enough, there's always a way to find a way. So is it harder for Australians? Definitely. We're obviously on the other side of the world. Millions of kids around the world have the same dream, playing the world in the Premier League. So what makes an Australian different to someone that's from anywhere else in the world? They've got the same issues about work permits. So yeah, it is tough, but I do believe, you know, if you're good enough, the clubs will find a way. And that's from junior right through to, you know, to the top team, the first team.
Fast track a little bit. Obviously you had the had spells at Huddersfield and back to Groningen. And obviously you had a spell as well in Croatia. And now you come back to Australia, now playing for the Perth Glory with a formidable coach in Tony Popovich. What was it like being coached by Tony? And would you say he's one of the best coaches you've had within your career thus far?
Yeah, he's definitely one of the best coaches I've had. I've been fortunate enough to work with a lot of high-quality coaches, coaches that have had, you know, or are having big careers. You know, I've worked also with Ange, who I rate really highly. So, yeah, he's definitely one of the best coaches that I've worked with. And he's, I think everyone kind of knows his philosophies and how he what he expects from his players. So, for me, it was something very different to what I've had in the past. But I thrived under that kind of dictatorship, if you want to kind of put it, in the regime. Enough said this, he's the top dog, and everyone had to fall into place, and he expects you to deliver day in, day out, not just on the football pitch, but off the football pitch. You need to live fully focused about being a professional athlete, and he expects the highest standards from all his players. So for me, I think coming back from Europe, it was definitely something I thought I needed at my particular time in my career. And, you know, it was one of the best decisions I ever made, coming back and working under him, because he gave me that springboard, that platform to be able to get my body back into shape and to perform, and gave me that opportunity to come back overseas and into South Korea. Now.
There's rumours recently that he might be coming to Melbourne Victory. Do you think that may be realistic?
I heard, I'm sorry to interrupt, I heard like Tony Pignard, it was like, I don't pronounce his last name, he's just like yeah, completely refuted. It's like if Anthony DiPietro was like, they're mates, so they, yeah, I don't know.
I saw the news as well. Yeah, you know, if that's something, or if that's something that he was interested in, I'm sure, you know, he's a very detailed person and character, so he will obviously look at everything. And in the world of football, rumours come thick and thin. So for me, obviously coming from Melbourne as well, I definitely want to play at least one time in my career in Melbourne, in my hometown. So that's something that I, you know, I would love to do. once in my career. When that is, you never know in football. You know, it could be it's a crazy one, because at the end of the day, with football, you never know where you're going to be tomorrow, or it depends on the performances. But we'll see what the future holds.
Yeah, maybe you'll be playing with Papa in victory, mate.
Melbourne.
Yeah.
It could be for West United as well. It could be for any team. Melbourne's a very big city. So
Melbourne's a big city, and there's three teams there, I think. So
there is, correct. Yeah. Correct. We'll focus a little bit on the A-League now. And I wanted to ask you, obviously played 28 games for Perth Glory in the 18-19 season. In terms of the A-League overall, do you feel like the A-League is progressing?
It's a bit hard for me to answer that, just purely and simply because I was really only there for 10 months, really. So I can only speak about the time that I've been there. So I can't really compare it to previous seasons or this season. I can only speak about that particular season. For me, I think people underestimate the quality that the A-League has. I know it's hard when, you know, people watch the Prem or European football. Sometimes they think, oh, European football, that's the destination that you have to go. And, you know, Australia's this or that. But it's definitely a league that if you come back to, or you try to, you know, establish yourself, if you don't take it serious, you can be left behind. That was the biggest focus for me coming back. I knew I had to make sure I didn't underestimate the quality. Because at the end of the day, it's the top league in Australia. It's a professional league, professional players. I think it's with the foreigners that have come over, it's kind of been hit and miss, because I think sometimes it's hard to find a foreigner that wants to come over and actually perform, not just come over and come for the good lifestyle and maybe towards the end of his career and just come to enjoy and pick up a paycheck. So it's a tough one, but I think the A-League has grown in the right direction from the start. It's gotten bigger, more teams have come involved. I know it's going through tough times at the moment financially and with the TV rights and everyone, and with obviously this COVID-19. But it's just important for Australian football that we, you know, we stick together, we find a way to make, you know, football grow. That's, you know, supporting the A-League, supporting the teams and making sure we can try and find the right model that works for Australian football.
And I guess I'd just like to add, obviously making the A-League Grand Final, playing against Sydney FC at, you know, such a big stadium at Optus Stadium in Perth, you know, describe that sort of atmosphere. Like, I mean, you played at World Cups, you played at an Asia Cup final, you've done all these wonderful things, but how does the A-League Grand Final sort of match against those?
Totally different, I guess. But I have to say, when you look at it, I think 55,000 people came to the game. Unbelievable stadium. I think it's probably one of my favorites in Australia. It's a modern stadium. And because it's quite far from everywhere else in Australia, it was pretty much all Perth Glory fans. So it was an unbelievable experience. We were quite fortunate enough. I think we played Chelsea in a preseason game before that, and it was the kind of same thing, like to have to play in that stadium. And in the grand final, it was a fantastic experience. And it goes to show the potential Australian football has, you know, because grand final, 55,000 people sold out in Perth. And it was a great match. Unfortunately, we didn't get the result we wanted. But it just shows you the potential that Australian football has, because when the quality is there and when the people want to get behind it, you know, they'll come and support their team. And, you know, I'm very grateful, and I enjoyed my time there because I really felt that connection with the Perth Glory fans. I thought, you know, they were fantastic. Yeah. Even when we played in Melbourne in the away section, it was always for away games or home games. Yeah. You kind of had that connection with the shared and other people as well, because, you know, they enjoyed the season. They really got behind us.
And obviously you left the Glory. Following that season, now he moved to Korea with Ulsan Hyundai. Very nice win the other day. Might I add?
Thank you.
I saw the highlights. She's so intense. You know, within the K-League, what is life like over in Korea compared to Australia? Obviously, two vastly different countries, but what's like the day-to-day life compared to Australia?
Totally different. Obviously, being an Australian and living back home in Australia, you know, you're very relaxed, different lifestyle. It's a bit more hustle and bustle here. I think it's 55 million population compared to Australia, where, you know, Australia is so big and everything's spread, so it's very relaxed. Where here, it's, you know, a lot of apartments, so everything's kind of like dense. Everything's it's very crowded. So very different lifestyle. I was fortunate enough to have lived in Japan when I was younger, so I kind of knew what I was heading to and what to expect with the culture. And from the football side, you know, I'm really enjoying my time because I've come to a fantastic club, very well structured, and very ambitious club. And we've got a good infrastructure at the club, so it makes it a lot more enjoyable coming to a country where, you know, you're coming to a club that's very organized, very ambitious, set targets that we wanted to accomplish, and to be a part of something like that, very professional setup, you know, it makes it a lot more easier coming over here.
You played in a lot of different places, Jason, but I just wanted to highlight something about the A-League. Obviously being born in Australia, you want to see football in the country grow to the best of the potential that it's there to reach. So I just wanted to ask you, do you think in terms of the marquees, there is a need to minimize the number of marquees in each team, or should that be the same or increase it? You know, because as you mentioned, there's a lot of players who just come wanting that paycheck to wind down their career sort of thing. So how do you feel about that particular situation?
You've got to take each player differently, you know, because, for example, I played with Diego Castro, and he's someone that, you know, has come over and he's a lot older and, you know, he's played at the highest level, for example, but he, you know, he performs in the A-League and you can see that passion and the desire that he wants to keep, you know, performing and playing well. So he's a foreigner that's come over and he's done the business and continues to work hard to be the best he can be week in, week out. So I think it's a bit unfair to say and put everyone in that kind of same bracket and say, oh, every foreigner that comes over is just coming for a paycheck. Yes, there has been players like that, but I think, like I said, with Diego, someone that I've personally been with, I can say that, you know, there has been good circumstances that it has worked out well. Even in Ola Toivonen that I played against last year, I thought he was a fantastic asset for Victory. Someone that, you know, in that particular year, he did really well and he bought quality and made the standard go higher. It's a double-edged sword, but I think with what has to be done with the foreigner, my opinion is that you've got to look into detail and not just the where's he played, how big is his profile. You need to look at the person as well and see, is he a player that wants to be hungry and wants to contribute and come over to Australia because he wants to, you know, still play at a high level, or is he that type of, you know, you need to do a bit more homework, I think, into seeing what the personality is as well, not just go for the name, where's he played, is he going to bring, you know, fans in, or, you know, look at that as well. Because at the end of the day, when you look at marquee, it's like here in Asia, for example, when you bring in foreigners, they're expected to be the best players on the pitch. That's why they get paid the most. And that has to be no different with the A-League. The players that are coming in from overseas are earning more. Usually that's the case. And they have to back it up. And if they don't, then you have to look at the situation and say, you know, why is that? Or are we doing the right scouting? Are we following the right process? And I think if we can find that kind of quality foreigner kind of player, then maybe you can increase the number to bring the level up. Because I think the biggest issue with this, because there's maybe not as many numbers, there is a lot of players at an early age that are playing for numerous clubs, and they're just, if they're not working out another one, they go to another and circulating around the league. So if you can find you know, the next generation of players in maybe the NPLs around the country, or bring maybe one or two more foreigners, but good quality foreigners that are, maybe don't have the biggest name, but they're, you know, hungry to play well and use maybe the league as a platform to go to another league, then that can help build the game and bring the quality, you know, higher.
I guess that sort of feeds into the argument of the salary cap. And you see teams like the classic argument, oh, Central Coast Mariners finished last every season or every other season. You know, they should just, you know, what's the point of salary cap if they're just going to be, you know, finishing last? Do you sort of believe that we should abolish the salary cap? And especially during this COVID-19 crisis, with the finances obviously going to be very much more like reduced. Where do you think the whole debate surrounding this should head towards?
I think at the end of the day, it all comes down to one thing, and that's not just for Australian football. I think every football club in the world, it all comes down to money. It's simple as that. So I know people are saying, oh, we should get rid of the salary cap, but you've got to look at what is the solution. I know that there's obviously richer, everywhere in the world you have richer clubs and clubs that don't have as much money. And then you create that kind of gap where you have your Real Madrid's, Barcelona's, for example, in La Liga, and then you have your lower teams. And I think the reasoning behind the salary cap maybe is so we don't create that the competition stays a bit more closer between the clubs. But it's a tough one. I think the clubs are spending what they have, and okay, yes, you make it a free for all and you can spend whatever you want. If the club doesn't have the money to spend, where are they going to get the money? Or, you know, they're spending what they can. So yeah, it's a tough one for me. I haven't played in the A-League long enough to give an opinion that I think that, you know, I'll find a solution. For me, it's a very tough one. I can understand both sides. I can understand why the salary cap is there. I know it's there to also protect the clubs from not overspending and putting themselves in a situation that, you know, they could go bankrupt. And then I can see the other side as well, where maybe the bigger clubs that have a better infrastructure want to spend more money because they have the resources to, but aren't allowed to. So, yeah, it's a tough one.
Having watched the state of football discussion, do you believe that it's actually feasible for Australia to implement a second division? And what clubs, in your perspectives, do you think would succeed in that area if they were promoted to that?
With the second division, I think the biggest setback for Australian football is how big our country is.
Yeah,
so
100%. Yeah.
It's very costly for teams to travel around Australia. So you can't compare the model of, let's say, the A-League to K-League, for example, because they don't have the costs of flying around, traveling. So it's a totally different kettle of fish, and it's so hard to say, oh, listen, let's make a second division. There's so many teams out there that want to be, but you've got to look at the financial side as well. And are they able to maintain that? Even we're just talking about A-League clubs, it's very difficult for them to maintain that yearly. And you mentioned before about Central Coast, about every year, about just making, you know, the wooden spoon, or financially they don't, they're struggling to maintain that. So you can open the doors up for a second division, but will they financially have the money to back that up? Maybe they do for a year or two, but in the long term, do they, you know, have they got the infrastructure to do that? It's easy to have all these plans and easy to have these ideas. But I think, yeah, the biggest setback is how big Australia is. I actually didn't watch the podcast, but I did see something on Instagram. I think Swartzy, on Optus, they were having a chat.
It was really interesting.
They had a chat about it, and I didn't watch the whole thing, but I did see something about having regional kind of second division idea. I think something like that makes a lot more sense than having a purely second division, like a second A-League into a national one. I think maybe a regional one would make that travel of costs a bit more easier on the teams, and then maybe somehow have you know, a playoff kind of setup. I'm not too sure, but I think the sole focus for Australian football is to get the A-League, making sure that model is set up, working well financially, you know, teams are making money, doing well, and then focusing on, you know, the lower divisions.
Any clubs that you'd like to see in there? Move into the A-League even?
Coming from Melbourne, my dad obviously playing, you know, you got clubs with a lot of history, Melbourne Knights, South Melbourne. You know, I think probably South Melbourne has a good infrastructure, a good fan base, good stadium. Yeah, it's tough because I don't know. I know that there's been talk that they've been trying to get an A-League license. I know that they've been trying to get one. But like I said, at the end of the day, it comes down to money, really. Are they financing?
License fees of up to like $19 million per team.
Yeah.
Sometimes like not even the best bids get in the A-League. It's just like which is more financially backed.
Yeah. So yeah, I definitely would like to see a Melbourne team, like I said, maybe, you know, I think South Melbourne would be one of the ones that have done, you know, had a big history as well. So maybe they're a club that maybe I would like to see there. But yeah, I think it's not around the corner. I still think there needs, you know, it's a few years away from that.
In the Asian Champions League, you've seen so many Australian clubs just fail and fail and fail by that one miracle job by Popper in 2014. But why don't you think these Australian clubs can compete against China's understandable that the money there is unbelievable, but many consider the A-League and the K-League to be on a fairly similar playing level. But what do you think really makes it hard for the clubs like Victory Sydney and Perth in more recent times unable to sort of progress to the knockout stages of the Asian Champions League?
I think it's important to say something one thing that you said was about people thinking that the A-League and K-League are thereabouts similar. I've played in both and I can definitely tell you it's a bit naive to think that purely and simply, I'm not talking about football perspective, but from a financial side, I can speak about my club here and like it comes back to the same issue, money. You know, our owner is Hyundai, so it's a multi-billion dollar company. And if you look at our squad, I was actually talking to one of my friends about this the other day. We've got international or current or ex-international South Korean national team players that are sitting on the bench and not even making the squad. That's how big our depth is. We've got 22, 23 players that can be starting 11 players. In Australia, because of the salary cap, you'd be like, it depends how you structure your team. You might have a fantastic starting 11 and then maybe younger players that are earning less in the squad, or you spread it out, for example, and then you might have 14 players. So the depth is totally different. It's not possible to have 22 players in the A-League that are high quality players. Yeah. That could be in the starting 11, just purely and simply because of the salary cap. Whereas in Korea, for example, if you want to splash the money, they can, because they have the money to. And if they want to go ahead.
Is there no like salary cap there? I'm not too familiar with the sort of
There's no salary cap. So I can speak about Ulsan, and for example, we've got every position is doubled up. And some positions are doubled up with national team players. So when you look at that and you look at the Asian Champions League, for example, because you're traveling so much, you've got so many games in the league, and then you've got to travel as well. To do well in so many competitions, you need to have depth. That's just normal. That's part and parcel of football. That's the same in Europe as well, with the cups and stuff like that. So depth is a key thing to doing well, I think, in international competitions, because you never know when injuries come and this, that. So I think the biggest hurdle for Australians and why maybe it's difficult in ACL is because of the depth. And if you look at when, I think when Popper won the Champions League, he kind of was, and what I've heard and spoken to some of my teammates that were in that squad, is he was playing a totally different team in the A-League and in the Champions League. He was going back and forth because that was the only way he could do, was balancing that out. Whereas, for example, our team, for example, in the K-League, when you have so many players in depth, it's quite easy to do that because, you know what I mean, you've got so many players. Maybe, so for an A-League team, to do that regularly, it's hard.
Difficult. That documentary explains a lot. I thought we'd just go into some quick fire questions here. What do you miss most about Perth? That's from someone from Twitter.
Football-wise or the city?
Let's go city.
City, lifestyle, unbelievable. Being a Melbourne boy, I've only been to Perth one time previously. That was for a national team game. My family loved it. It's a place that I call home. Amazing people, relaxed, very cool vibe, chilled. Beaches is amazing, weather's amazing. One of my favorite spots that I lived in.
Yeah. This is a very tough one. Out of all the cities that you've lived in, which one has the best barber? I didn't ask that one. It wasn't me, mate.
It's a tough one. Thankfully for me, every city that I've gone to, I found a top quality barber. For me, I had one in Perth, Melbourne, England, everywhere I've gone, I keep in touch with them all. So my barbers are close to my heart. I keep in touch and, you know, become good friends with all of them.
Admittedly, I'm a self-admitted like hype beast. Like, I do like that stuff. I see you do enjoy that stuff as well. What's your collection looking like at the moment? And like, what's like your favorite, like, you know, clothing item or just shoe that you currently have at the moment?
It's a weird one because for me, with like clothing and shopping and stuff like that, because it's been a lockdown here, man, like honestly, I've done nothing in the last 4 months. Like, I've probably saved the most money in my life because I haven't done nothing. Go to training. I wear the same tracksuit all the time. Just chill, relax. But I'm definitely someone that enjoys, you know, fashion. And in Perth, I really like for me, like I had a good time in England. I think the best fashion probably Holland and in England, especially like the change rooms and stuff like that, the vibes and the players, like everyone was very, you know, into their fashion. And I really enjoyed it. Probably those two countries.
All right, this is from Leap Rocks and Facts. Now, here's some story here. I've actually never heard of it. It's like, he asked, have you ever been late to anything since getting your whole Japanese team's head shaved off for arriving to training late?
Yeah, I, when I was younger, I think probably I did an interview where when I was younger about Japan, just how strict and difficult it was over there, especially going through the academy. Like when you're younger, like the punishments over there was to shave your head for the whole squad. I was late to a training session or a meeting and the whole squad had to get their head shaved. But thankfully enough, after that, I kind of never really been late. I've never been punished again for shaving my head or anyone else's head. So, yeah. No, I haven't.
I guess that's a good thing to an extent.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I'll ask this. All right, fine. We've sort of already been over it, but I guess how much of your wage goes towards like these collabs, you know, like Supreme and stuff like that, you know?
If you feel comfortable answering.
That's what I'm saying. Like, these questions are weird, but like, I guess sort of just narrow it down a little bit. Do you believe that like lifestyle, you know, to have that presence on social media is like really important for a footballer, especially in this very technically like advanced age? Or do you feel that it's sort of just, it varies from player to player?
I think it's important to especially for young players, because I saw this especially when I was in Europe with the younger players. It's very easy to fall into the trap of coming into a team and seeing how, you know, the older players dress or how they spend their money, and it's easy to get caught up in that lifestyle. I think it's important to not do it as a trend, but to do it because you're that type of person. Passion. If you like that kind of stuff and that's your passion, then you do it because, you know, that's what you enjoy. Not to do it because, you know, every Tom, Dick, or Harry does it and you just want to be part of the group. I think it's important. And I've kind of been like that in my life, not just with football, but I've kind of been doing my own thing and doing things that I enjoy and doing it. Even my hair, for example, people ask me, oh, you always, you know, about barbers and coloring your hair and stuff. It's because I enjoy it. And at the end of the day, I do it for myself. It's not to do it for
it's
anyone.
Like being, it's like uniqueness and like individualism. That
yeah, and that's just how I am. And that's how people have known me. And that's my trend. And that's how I feel comfortable with myself. So my advice, with people like that, people, especially younger players, is just to do you. I know, and I think it's a great example. I don't know if you follow him, but Hector Bellerin, on his Instagram. I know a lot of people look at him and, you know, hammer him, concentrate on football, or do this or do that, or what kind of fashion is that? Blah, blah. But that's a perfect example that you should just do you, and, you know, if that's what makes you feel comfortable, or how you perceive yourself, I think that's the most important thing, and to shut out everything else. And with the fashion, the first part of your question, I've been lucky enough to get a lot of, you know, free stuff through football and the collabs and stuff like that, you know, a lot of free things. So I haven't really spent so much money on it, but
I wish I could be in your position. I need to get those those threes. Not those threes. Yeah, no, they're three. Are they? The Game Royals that came out the other week. Sick.
And it makes it harder now because of Instagram and all that. People look at that, and it's so much social media and stuff like that. So much is out there. Sometimes it's hard because, you know, you see something and it's so easy and accessible now, especially with social media.
Yeah, I guess we'll just finish. Obviously, you got many many Australians playing in South Korea. You got Connor Chapman. I'll be trying to get this right. Adam Taggart, Connor Chapman, Rashid Mahazi, Brandon O'Neill, Terry Antonis, Nick Ansell. Have I missed anyone?
Me.
But do you stay in contact with those guys? And, you know, how's that? I guess it's like a sense of unity between you guys. I mean, you're all playing in South Korea ultimately.
We do have a group chat. The PFA organized one just because of COVID-19. So there was a group chat for the Aussies just to make sure that we're all on the same, you know, keeping in touch and talking about, you know, situations at our clubs. But besides from that, it's, you know, I know Tags. I played with him in the national team. I know Terry as well. I saw Tags yesterday. We keep in touch on Instagram and stuff like that. But because we live so far apart, like if you actually look at it on the map.
Yeah.
Aside from, I think, probably Tags, Terry, and Mahazi, they all kind of live in Seoul. The rest of us are all kind of like, you got Anil in Poha, like me in Usa. Like, we're all kind of spread out. It's not like we're kind of in the same city and we can catch up. It's a bit tough like that. But I do probably speak to Tags the most.
Yeah, I mean, you've got a long season ahead. I think the season got shortened, is that right? To 27 games.
38, from 38 to 27.
All right. So when's the season meant to finish currently?
November 3rd or 4th, I think, is when the split round finishes, the 22 games, and then we go into a split round. So it looks like the same time as last year. The champion will be, I think, decided December, first week of December is usually the last game of the season.
And what's it like getting all this publicity, I guess, on the K-League? Obviously, I think the first week was pretty much the only major league that was being played in the world besides the Belarusian Premier League. So obviously with the Bundesliga starting up this week, I guess K-League and the Bundesliga. So what's it like to have all this newfound attention, newfound fame for the K-League?
Yeah, I think it's amazing, not just for the K-League, but for Asian football in general. You know, there was, I think it was 16, 17 countries, something like that, that started to broadcast the K-League. I know Optus Sports in Australia bought the rights. So for the K-League, it's great exposure. For footballers in the K-League, it's great exposure. And with football, you never know who's watching. So for players, it gives them that a bit more extra probably motivation, because they know if they play well, now the whole world is watching. And, you know, opportunities can come from that. And like I said, for Asian football, it's great exposure. And I hope, and I think it's possible. I think if other other countries in Asia can follow suit and play games or start playing games before maybe the European and other countries, maybe also it's great exposure for the other countries. I think A-League's been talking about maybe August coming up again.
Yeah.
So, you know, if the world is kind of starved of football at the moment, so being able to be a part of a league that's up and running and everyone kind of watching it, it feels fantastic. And I'm just happy as well that people back home in Australia, my family and friends can watch as well our games.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason, for contributing your time to this podcast. You know, good luck for the season. Honestly, from a personal note, I've really had a soft spot for yourself. You know, I've always kept an eye on you going from the World Cup to West Brom to Perth. And I'd love to see, you know, where your career takes you.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Enjoyed the chat.